This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Second hour of four getting started. Grant and Danny on the Fan. At 11:18, coming up in just about 15 ticks, the Wizards have made it official. Tommy Shepard is their general manager, no longer the interim GM. What do we think of the decision? Plus, he'll have a press conference today, and he'll be flanked by a few of the top new executives he's brought in to help him run the front office. Some pretty fascinating names. We'll tell you who they are coming up at 11:18. You have heard of at least two of these three guys. I can promise you that. But right now, let's go to the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Welcome onto the show. Longtime friend of the program, Nate Davis. You know his work from USA Today Sports. He is an NFL writer, editor, and columnist at USA Today. And he does a 2019 NFL projection that every year we enjoy when it comes out. I enjoyed it less this time because he's got the Redskins going 3-13, as we found out today. So, Nate, you go through every game, you pick a winner or loser, and then you go back and kind of add up everybody's record is how this works, right?
Yep, Grant, that's how I do it. I try to just go game by game and try not to, you know, and obviously the information is based on what we know today, not anybody's torn ACL or suspension that's going to happen a month from now. But, yeah, you try not to give any team any particular weight. You just pick all the games, see how it shakes out, and you get what you get. So Redskins were 3-13 in this drill this year.
So when you see the 3-13 for the Redskins, A, do you actually think they're a 3-13 team? And then B, do you go, well, that's a few games worse than they probably are? Like, there's no correction after that, obviously, but what's your take on the exercise netting that result?
Yeah, I've been a little skeptical on them really since the end of last season. I mean, I will say I very much liked their draft, but, you know, when is that going to pay dividends? Who's the quarterback going to be? I mean, you're talking about an opening of Eagles, Cowboys, Bears, you know, the first 3 weeks. I personally kind of hope that they don't throw Dwayne Haskins out to a murderer's row like that. Patriots in week five, too, by the way. And then you got the Trent Williams situation and just so much other stuff. Given the general quality of the NFC East, certainly Dallas and Philadelphia, it looks like a pretty tough road for them, in my opinion.
USA Today's Nate Davis joins us here on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. So, Nate, I think these sorts of things invite, you know, the angry tweets and the discussions and everything.
Oh, yes,
like that.
They do, Danny.
Yeah, I know you know that going in, but so it jumps out when it's kind of out of line is the wrong term, but kind of out of school, out of whack when it comes to everyone else's predictions, right? So Vegas has the Redskins, I think, 6.5 or 7 wins. 3 would be bottoming out. What scenario do you see, or where do you make up that gap? In other words, why are they 3 or 4 wins less in your mind, or is it just a product of the math?
I mean, it's simply the math. I mean, the reason I started doing this, Danny, was because, I mean, you'd see some outlets, and, you know, there wasn't any team that was worse than 7-9 or 6-10, mm-hmm. In which case, you know, the math really doesn't work out, right? I mean, somebody's got to go 3-13 every year. And I feel like those Vegas things, I mean, you rarely see, you know, the over-unders on those things at more than, say, 11.5, you know, fairly rarely. And the low ones are generally 5.5, 6.5. So, you know, they keep it relatively conservative. But for me, I'm just trying to, you know, get it. And it's an exercise for me, too, just kind of, you know, what am I thinking about mm-hmm. each of these teams? Yeah, I mean, I think the Redskins, it is what it is. I mean, I think they're a young team. They're not stable at the quarterback position. You know, Jay Gruden, is he going to be coaching to win games, or is he going to try to be developing players? I mean, obviously, I think everybody thinks he's probably got this year to save his job, but is he necessarily armed to do that? You know, I don't know. I mean, there are things I like about the Redskins. I mean, I think the defense could be good. It's just, you know, do they have the weapons on offense? You know, where's Darius Geis going to be? I mean, and again, the schedule, particularly the way it opens, is tough. And if you come out at a 1-4 or 0-5 kind of hole, which looks like they very well could, these things tend to have a tailspin effect.
Nate Davis, USA Today on Grant and Danny. He's got the Chargers beating the Eagles in the Super Bowl. The NFC East, the Eagles 11-5, the Cowboys 9-7, and then the Giants winning 5 games with the Redskins going 3-13. What do you think happens? I'm going to drill down a little bit deeper on what you just got into there. For them to go 3-13, which is kind of the catastrophic rock bottom of worst-case scenarios for them this year, what has to happen?
Well, I mean, for them to go 3-13, I think they do get off that slow start, and then maybe whether it comes from ownership or whether Jay Gruden decides, hey, I got to make a switch at quarterback, assuming, say, that we start out with Case Keenum or even Colt, and then you throw in maybe Haskins in there. And I think Dwayne Haskins is probably the classic guy that could use that redshirt NFL season. I mean, after starting for 1 year in college and playing in an offense that – he had great numbers, but, you know, a lot of those touchdown passes he had were of the 1 yard jet sweep variety that pumped those up. And I think he could really use that time to blossom. And you kind of worry if he gets thrown in there this year, is he going to be ready to dissect and play against NFL defenses? But, you know, particularly if he's, you know, potentially got a left tackle back there who's not Trent Williams, let's say. And Dwayne Haskins isn't the most mobile guy. So, I mean, I think those are all kinds of things that you could look at. These are possibly things that could feed into a negative season. You know, Jordan Reed, does he get hurt once again? And if the offense does struggle, which it looks to me like it will, you know, as good as your defense can be, offense protects the defense, defense protects the offense for good teams. And if that defense, even if it's playing up to its potential, if it's out on the field 35 minutes a game, you know, 70 snaps a game, that tends to wear down. So I think those are all, to me, worrisome factors that could take the Redskins down.
Any other numbers when you went through this and did this exercise where you went, damn, I didn't think this team was going to be this way, good or bad?
Yeah, I think the one I'm going to get a little blowback on is I've got the 49ers going 10-6 and winning the NFC West and ahead of both the Seahawks and Rams, who I both had at 9-7. But, you know, I think the Seahawks, who I infamously picked at 4-12 last year, I think they'll be solid, but, you know, again, now they're in that phase where Russell Wilson's making all the money. They've got more young players coming up, but they don't have that great supporting cast around him. I think they'll always be a tough team. And then the Rams, you know, two-time division champs, I think they're going to regress a little bit. You know, we're going to see what's up with Todd Gurley's knee. But another first-place schedule, we've all seen what typically happens with that Super Bowl hangover with teams that lose in February. Oftentimes they don't do as well the next year. And I think people really are kind of sleeping on San Francisco. I mean, they don't have a lot of name players. Obviously, Jimmy Garoppolo is back. I really like what they've done on that defense, particularly on the line with all the pass rushers. And these guys, you know, have really been beset by injuries the last 2 years. But they have played very hard for 2 years for Kyle Shanahan. And now I think they're getting kind of a full deck. I think Kyle Shanahan is an excellent play caller. He's got his quarterback back. They don't have a premier offensive guy, maybe outside of George Kittle, but they have a lot of good players. So I think that they're going to be tough for teams to dissect, and I think they could surprise.
NFC North, I think, is going to be loaded. You've got the Vikings 12-4, the Bears 11-5, and then the Packers 9-7. Any of those three teams to me look like they probably could win the division. I happen to think the Bears are going to take a step back, but is that the best division, do you think, in football right now?
It's probably, to me, Grant, probably like the best maybe three-team combo. I mean, it's hard to quite know, I guess, what you're getting with the Packers, because how do they adapt to Matt LaFleur, and are he and Aaron Rodgers going to be okay? But, you know, if I had in the story today, you know, Aaron Rodgers has never missed the playoffs 3 years in a row. Brett Favre never did it, so, you know, he doesn't want to be in that club. But I'm kind of with you. I mean, if you consider the Bears 11-5 a step back, I agree with that. I mean, I still think they're a good team, really good defense, but 36 takeaways last year. You know, the offense was ranked 21st and really benefited from a lot of those, you know, great field positions and even defensive scores. You can't count on that year over year. So is Mitch Trubisky the guy? You know, we're gonna see this year, I think. I mean, he took a step forward last year, but still not sure he's that franchise quarterback, and I just don't know that he's going to get as many advantageous positions. Whereas I think the Vikings, you know, I wasn't surprised that they struggled last year. I think the whole thing was probably going to be a 1 year back or one step back, two steps forward for Kirk Cousins. time to take those two steps forward now. And I think that they're kind of geared better. They're going to run the ball like Mike Zimmer wants. That defense should be back. I think they're going to be a good team. So, yeah, like you said, Grant, maybe for three teams, that could be the best division, top to bottom. I think you could look at either the AFC South or NFC South as being the best top to bottom divisions.
Nate, always good content, buddy. Appreciate the time, man.
Thank you, guys.
See you, my friend.
Check out the exercise in the USA Today, really well done every year. And as he said, a lot of people don't do it this way. I like that he does because the math all adds up.
That's a key point, by the way. Instead of just saying, well, this team is 14-2 and this team is 13-3. Well, there are too many wins in there. It's got to even out. He does it in the even way.
And I like that. Whether you like the end result or not for your team, that's the way that everyone should do their predictions.
Mm-hmm.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. The Wizards no longer have an interim general manager. It's Tommy Shepard's job, and he's got a staff he'll be introducing today. We'll get into that next right here on the Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The press conference is set today for 3 o'clock. Tommy Shepard being introduced by Ted Leonsis as the general manager and the guy that's going to run the basketball operation for the Wizards. He is also going to introduce the staff that he's put together, led by Sashi Brown.
That name, yes.
Sashi Brown, who, of course, was with the Cleveland Browns. He took on a lot of heat and scrutiny, but a lot of what they did while he was there has helped the Browns immensely as they've put their roster together now. He basically is known as a guy who's a number cruncher, who's an analytically brilliant mind. The Wizards, perhaps by hiring Sashi Brown, will start focusing more on analytics. That's the hope, I would say. His new role and his title is Chief Planning and Operations Officer.
Meaning he's not a scout. He's not deciding which player to draft or which player not to draft. It seems like it's more of a, hey, this is what this asset is worth, right? In other words, a future second-round pick doesn't seem like much. Here's why it's worth more than you think it is, et cetera. That kind of forward thinking you're mentioning.
I love that hire.
I do too.
I think Sashi Brown is a really smart guy, and I think you need a guy, whether it's him or somebody else, like him in your front office. It's, you know, it's the equivalent to what I always talk about is the R&D department with the Nats, where they got eight guys that sit around and crunch numbers and say, wait a second. If we're evaluating trading a player or just getting a draft pick, let's figure out what those are worth. What is that asset worth? Also, they've added John Thompson III, the former Georgetown coach, as their monumental basketball vice president of player development and engagement. So it sounds like his role is going to be to help develop players off of the court. That's not something that is as important to me necessarily. But I get that it is a pivotal part of the organization, and John Thompson III, with his local ties, is who they've tapped to do that. Cool. I care a lot more about the Sashi Brown part of this. I care about the Tommy Shepard part of this, and that's really where we'll focus, I'm sure.
Here. And there's another name that was in community relations that's now the vice president of player engagement. I don't know what that means. I do know that there were a lot of buzzwords used in this press conference to introduce synergy and groupthink and outside the box and paradigms and all that other kind of stuff. Here's what I care about. Tommy Shepard got the interim tag taken away after a trial period of, I would say, a couple months where he was on the job sort of by default. This process started months ago, right? Nearly 5 months now at this point, right? And there was big game hunting. There were a lot of interviews, and it turned out that the guy in-house was the guy all along. I called that, by the way, and not that I'm some genius. I just sort of saw the writing on the wall months and months and months ago. This is how it was going to end up, was going to be Tommy Shepard. It looked like I was going to be wrong for a little bit when the reports of Connolly in town visiting or this Masai Ujiri big white whale was coming. But ultimately, they settled on a guy that basically Ted Leonsis didn't talk to by his own admission. Because of the old structure, Ronnie Grunfeld had Leonsis' ear, and that was it. Nobody else knew what guys were doing. And the billion-dollar question, the only thing that matters to me, and I would say a lot of Wizards fans, is Mr. Shepard, sir, Tommy, what were you doing when these decisions were made? What were you doing? I'm not mad at anybody. I just want to know. I want to know, did you say, hey, not a great idea to sign Jan Mahimi to that contract? Hey, Andrew Nicholson, hey, pick that trade where you're giving up a first-round pick for a veteran, Trevor Ariza. Or, hey, we're keeping these veterans when we're 10 games under 500, scratching for the 8th seed. That's not good planning. What were you doing when these calls were made?
When the Caps hired Brian McClellan as their GM, who'd been in the room with George McPhee, and a lot of people, and I'm one of them, said, you can't hire Brian McClellan.
I said that.
If you're getting rid of George McPhee for a fresh set of eyes to try to go in a different direction, you can't hire his right-hand man and say that you've made a change. He was in the room with him for all of this, all these years. He's got to think similarly to him. But right away what came out was, well, Brian McClellan was adamantly against the Philip Forsberg trade, and there were a couple times where he said, let's not do this, or stood on the table to do something different than what, in his case, his Ernie Grunfeld did, and that was George McPhee. Now, there's a big difference between these two situations in that the Capitals were very good all those years.
Right.
And McPhee, by and large, has been a very good GM who would immediately get another job to run an expansion team that he would take the Stanley Cup in his first season. Ernie Grunfeld has done a terrible job. The Wizards were not a very good team for most of his tenure, and he will never work again, I don't think, as a general manager.
You wouldn't think so.
So it's a little bit different to hire the underling of McPhee, pretty good GM, as opposed to Grunfeld, whatever the opposite of that is. However, I'm with you. You want to know what he did differently? I'm assuming when he went in with his notebook and his binder and he talked to Ted Leonsis, he said, listen up, here was the advice I gave on this acquisition. Here's what I thought about this. Here's one thing that's very different about me and Ernie, and I know that he must have said this because it's how he acted. I value the draft. I value the second round. I value picks. I value them as assets. I think Tommy Shepard was going to be the GM all along after they found out that they couldn't bring in Connolly.
Mm-hmm.
And when they couldn't bring in Connolly and the Masai Ujiri thing, whatever happened, was just, as you said, like a pipe dream, and that was not a thing. Then they said, okay, this is Tommy Shepard's gig. Now, why they waited, I don't really know. I would have liked for him to have been named general manager before the draft.
I think the public reaction is what they were afraid of, which is why you see the news broken at 8 o'clock on a Friday night.
Probably true.
Now, again, I'm looking at Tommy Shepard going, I like what he's done so far. And I've been on record saying that, and I'll continue to say that as long as he has.
If he's the interim and you give him an offseason based on what he's done so far, I think regardless of what he would have done, whether we hated it, loved it, whether Leonsis hated it or loved it, he was going to be the GM anyway. But he's done a good enough job with right now what he was basically handed.
Yes.
That he gets a chance now to run this thing. I guess my big question is, what's he going to do with Bradley Beal? That would be the first question I ask him in the interview.
That's a major question. The other part of this, though, is, again, back to the public reaction that they were worried about. And I understand that. Just, again, binary one or zero, look at it this way. You fired your general manager, which caused fans to celebrate. People are pumping their fists, recording videos of themselves like it's a USA World Cup goal. They're giddy. They're jubilant. It's amazing. We're so happy, right? You do it before the season ends to get started on this process. You're left with a guy that had an office down the hall.
Yeah,
it's hard to be excited about that just based on that. And again, all I'm doing is saying, I understand that people are going to have reservations about it, but look what Tommy Shepard has done. And I'm very pleased that, as I kind of alluded to, that's why you wait. That's why you do it Friday night at 8 o'clock in a news dump fashion and kind of roll this out with all these other toys, the Sashi Browns and Director of Player Engagement and Community Involvement and Hand-Holding and Kumbaya and, you know, tell me more about the esports team. That's all well and good. They didn't feel like this would go over that well, which is why they did it the way that they did it to me. And that tells me something about their process.
Well, I agree with that. I'm not sure how related to the process it is for me. I think the reason the announcement came out when it did on a Friday night is what you're saying. I think the reason they waited this long is they thought they'd get crushed if right away they said it's Tommy Shepard's job, particularly if they did it right after the Masai Ujiri news came out.
Yeah.
If that Masai Ujiri news never leaked, I think they probably would have named Tommy Shepard before the draft. Mm-hmm. I think to go from the idea of the Wizards are making a real push, $10 million stake of ownership, Masai Ujiri, to 5 days later going, it's Tommy Shepard.
It's been Tommy Shepard all along.
Not a good look. No. Whether that was all true and accurate and factual or not, it just would have looked terrible. So I think that pushed the timeline back, frankly. And even before that, when they missed on Connolly, if you miss on someone and then you immediately hire the plan B, or in this case maybe plan C, it doesn't look great. But what they can, I think, pretty easily sell here is, he's not Ernie Grunfeld, and look at the offseason. Here's a lot of proof that he's not Ernie Grunfeld.
Yeah.
He's done a bunch of things that Ernie would not have done.
These are non-Grunfeldian moves, to coin a phrase.
And it's been an offseason that I will say I like to this point. Now, I'm to the extreme. I think most Wizards fans disagree with me. I want to now trade Bradley Beal and get as much back as possible in the way of future picks, young players, whatever you can get back.
They are firmly not going to do that. Leontis today said, why can't this rebuild be quick? My hand will go up. John Wall's crippling contract and the fact they'll never be the same. That's why. Do you have any other questions for me? I'm happy to consult.
Yeah. I didn't even see that comment, but it's not going to be a quick rebuild because of the John Wall contract, and it's why I'd like to trade that contract with Bradley Beal. And if you can't get a lot back for Bradley Beal because you have to get out of the contract, cost of doing business.
So be it, man.
Then at least you're able to not have to be saddled with that noose around your neck for the next few years.
Mm-hmm.
But Tommy Shepard, interim tag off, 3 p.m. press conference. More on that today throughout the day on 106.7 The Fan. Next, do you think Trent Williams is the only offensive line issue the Redskins are dealing with? Only drama that could come during camp? You are wrong. Another one of their stars, another one of their Pro Bowlers is dealing with some off-field drama as well. Next on Grant and Danny, we are steamrolling toward 11:45, and how much weight did Danny gain on vacation? And may not be showing up for work. I think that's the thought on the Redskins' offensive line is, well, the left tackle position's in trouble and is a problem. And without Trent Williams, this is bad. But at least you still have Morgan Moses at right tackle and Brandon Scherff at right guard and Chase Roullier at center. And that's going to anchor the offensive front.
A couple young offensive linemen that they drafted to in the mid to late rounds as some supplements. You had Eric Flowers. That's not a name that inspires confidence, but he's a human being who's worn an NFL uniform before, I guess.
I'm not going to throw him into the mix.
Yeah.
Just
I didn't
yet.
I lost confidence as I was saying that sentence.
Wes Martin, Ross Pierce Baker, I haven't seen them be terrible yet.
Right.
Their picks in the third and fifth rounds, respectively. So I'll give them the benefit of the doubt, perhaps. I've seen the Eric Flowers boat ride.
I saw that movie. I don't want to.
Those waves are big, and the boat doesn't get back to shore looking Mm-mm. the same. Mm-mm. That having been said, there is another storyline on the offensive line. Pete and I talked about at one point last week, you weren't here for, which is, supposedly, they've made two offers to Brandon Scherff, Danny.
Mm-hmm.
And they haven't gotten close, support, according to at least one report, to a deal. Which makes you think either Brandon Scherff wants top guard and football-type money, or they're not offering him near top-of-the-line scratch. Remember what Jay Gruden once said about Scherff. And this is after he made a Pro Bowl. He's a guard.
Guard.
Perhaps he doesn't love the guard position. Doesn't value it like some teams do that are paying guards in free agency, $14, $15 million a year. I tell this story all the time, but I know Mike Shanahan thought nothing of guards. I mean, he would. You joked earlier about Corey Lichtensteiger. He would just call guys kind of off the street that could run his scheme, and he felt like they'd coach around any deficiencies they might have and via play calling and scheming because you dictate terms on offense. It doesn't matter that much if you have a weakness on the inside of the offensive line. I don't really know what Jay Gruden thinks. I don't think he's as strong on that as Shanahan. But when he was talking about the draft at one point, he said, we've drafted two guys. And one was Josh Doctson, who didn't play.
Yeah, one guy didn't play, and the other was a guard.
And the other one's a guard. It's like, yeah, he's a really, really good guard. But it didn't seem like Jay Gruden was that thrilled that the other was a Pro Bowl guard.
Right. This is what I need to know. And you follow this more closely than I have, as I was out last week and, you know, just sort of barely reading stuff on the periphery. There are two choices here as I see it. Choice one is the Redskins don't value the player and they're trying to lowball and just sort of get an affordable deal done for a David DeCastro type amount of money, which is $10 million, not the $14 that Zach Martin signed for, the $13.3 that Andrew Norwell just signed for. They're trying to get a bargain and Sheriff's not into the bargains. Or number two, this is just the standard contract posturing that takes place when there's negotiations going on. And this will all get done. Where do you see it closer to?
It's probably closer to the second one, I would think. Like, eventually this is going to get done. Because mm-hmm. I just don't see any logical reason why the Redskins would allow Brandon Scherff to leave. When you draft a guy mm-hmm. in the first round and he becomes a star, and make no mistake about it, as a guard, I know that that position doesn't sell jerseys and there's no highlights and they're not showing clips on Football Night in America. But he's one of the best in the league at the position. He was well on his way to a third straight Pro Bowl pre-injury this year. you keep those guys.
You try to.
They did that with Trent Williams, first round pick, top five like Sheriff. They did that with Ryan Kerrigan, first round pick, 16th overall. They've started, it seems to me, like they want to operate where they're going to retain the best players on their roster. They are going to re-sign these guys, and they're not going to let them walk. Now, you can make the case Jamison Crowder works against that, but I think it's easier to find help in the slot. They decided, you know what, we drafted Trey Quinn. It's a little bit of a drop-off, but he's about to get overpaid. He's about to get $30 million. He gets hurt a little bit too often
for
us.
You can't keep everybody.
Right.
Right?
And if you can't keep everyone, maybe the logic should be, then a guard shouldn't be one of the guys that you keep.
Yeah.
But I just think you've hit a home run. This is what it looks like. You drafted a player that people told you when you took them, and he went to guard, this was a mistake. He's ended up being outstanding. He's very good as a run blocker. He's very good in pass protection. There's not much more to see here. I think ultimately this gets done, but am I confident in that? Not particularly. What are you waiting for?
Because my read is that it's some posturing here from Sheriff's camp. This is what an agent is supposed to do.
But what are they waiting for?
Well, I don't think the Redskins are waiting for anything. I think this is a Sheriff issue.
Are they trying to hit the market?
I don't know that they're trying to hit the market. I think they're willing to. I think they're willing to say, this cost is going to go up. Well, you'll meet us up here. Because they know that each time it's happened, I'm sure the Redskins offer didn't go down. They're not doing an NFL owners thing where they go, this is your offer today, and tomorrow you lose $1 million on the end of it. They're escalating. And at that rate, they'll get to where Sheriff's camp wants to go. He may end up being one of the highest paid guards in football.
But don't we know by him not having signed yet that the Redskins have not offered him elite guard money? Why would they turn that down, in other words? This is a guy that's been injured a couple of times in the last 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
You get hurt again, you're not getting that money. Right now, you're about to embark on camp. Nothing good is happening before September to boost your value. Basically, over the next 6 weeks, nothing good can happen. I feel like if they made an offer where they said, you are now Andrew Norwell, you're Zach Martin, whatever the AAV would be, somewhere in that 14 range or what have you, you got to take that. My guess is they haven't yet. If they've made two offers and supposedly they're not close, I have to assume they just haven't gotten into that ballpark yet.
Well, yes, that I'd buy that. But if, again, from Sheriff's perspective, the Redskins, let's say they come in, this feels like the offseason of doing contract stuff. It's been a couple years since we've really gotten into the nitty-gritty of doing this. I kind of miss it, to be honest with you. But if they're in the Trey Turner or Roger Saffold, David DeCastro is who I alluded to, $10, $11 million AAV, Sheriff just saying no thank you doesn't mean the Redskins aren't close. This isn't a mockery. This isn't like, you offer him, I don't know, what Kyle Long signed for, which is $6 million. You're not going down. It doesn't mean that they're $15 million AAV off per year. It could be that, we're averaging, the offer is similar to what the franchise tag would be, the average of the top five guys or whatever. And there's no incentive for Sheriff to hurry up and sign this because there's still some time, you're right, before his, quote, value could diminish.
Love to see a deal get done during camp. We're going to be in Richmond Thursday and Friday. Practices begin Thursday morning at 9:45, 15 minutes before we go on the air. Ton of Redskins guests. We will get to the bottom of so many stories with this team, with the people involved in the storyline. Sheriff, the coaching staff, when we get down there for those 2 days in Richmond. So it'll be must-listen here on Grant and Danny. Speaking of must-listen, next, our double play. How much weight did Danny gain while he was on vacation?
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Last night. So it's really 10 days.
Did you stop and eat on your way home last night?
No, I ate dinner before I left.
Okay. Did you weigh this morning or last night?
I weighed this morning. Okay, I weighed myself the morning of the 12th to get my initial result, which I recorded, and then I weighed myself this morning for the end result of vacation.
Cancels it out a little bit because those are both your lightest versions of yourself on the 12th.
Right.
And on the 22nd, mm-hmm. 10 days apart. I've got a few questions for Brendan and Thom
do as well. Absolutely.
First question, how many times did you go out to eat while on vacation?
Let's see. So over the 10 days, I want to say six. There's a couple lunches in there. Okay. Maybe seven. Six. I'll say six or seven. Full dinners, lunches, big stuff.
How many days out of the 10 did you eat donuts?
Three.
What was the most donuts you had in one sitting?
Three and a half.
That's a lot of
donuts. And by the way,
this
is not, you didn't ask me this, but I'm going to answer it anyway. I'm going to give you information.
Yeah.
I gorged myself the first 2 days. I put on an absurd display. I was shameful and disgusting. I was a sweaty hog beast and a mess. I went to the trough and kept going, and I overdid it. My wife was concerned. She expressed that concern. I brushed her off like a gadfly to a bull.
Hamburg.
Thank you very much. And I ate three and a half donuts that second day, and a whole bunch of things happened. I ate a lot of stuff. I got sick. Saturday night, I vomited. I gorged myself so much that my body rejected it like it was an organ from somebody else.
That's going to lower the weight count, though.
Mayonnaise. It was so disgusting. And the next day, of course, I don't vomit.
So
quietly.
You got sick after 2 days?
After 2 days, I got sick.
Okay.
And I had to quietly admit to my wife that she was correct and I was incorrect. And that was that.
How many times did you exercise?
Zero dedicated exercise.
I mean, did you go to a gym?
No.
Did you get on a treadmill?
No.
Okay.
None of that.
So you did no exercise other than your normal living?
Yeah.
Did you do anything extra like walks down the beach or anything like that?
None of those things. The only exercise, again, I'm very sweaty, hauling all the equipment for the family
but
to enjoy.
But that's just part of the day.
Part of the day.
But you did nothing where you said, I'm getting fatter, I have to burn calories.
That is correct.
Did you have any alcohol?
Authentic Natty Bo collection?
Yes, not a lot, obviously.
Beers or cocktails?
I had a total over the 10 days of 3 beers, and I had to have one cocktail once that I didn't want at all.
What was it?
A lemon drop.
I didn't want
that even a little bit.
All right.
But the bartender shamed me into getting something, and that's what she produced. I thought that was
disgusting.
Did you
eat any fried foods as appetizers?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Okay.
Plenty.
Your entrees were fishy, healthy type stuff, I'm guessing?
Yeah, but when you fry it, it's not as healthy. Like crab cakes, that's what Maryland does. No turkey. That's disgusting. Turkey's dry and bland and dumb. I had plenty of things. Nothing I ate was specifically good for me, I would say.
All right, I think my last question before I turn things over to Thom and Dar with their questions.
Mm-hmm.
Can I get the rundown of just your one of the early 2 days that led to you getting sick, like what you ate that day? Give me the rundown of one of those days.
I brought my EMP cereal, so I'd have that, but then I'm still hungry, so I continued to eat. I would grab some Honey Nut Cheerios in a big, giant bowl, a huge one, the appropriate-sized man bowl, not like a little, tiny, small-portion bowl, but the bowl that I would eat normally if I was just a hungry person, which is about half of a box. Then the donuts came. I had the bacon maple donut from Duck Donuts first.
Love it.
Then I got, there was a really good chocolate with colored sprinkles on it. I got that. Then I had a peanut butter donut, which is really, really good.
I just like the way I just felt.
I did, Jay. I had a little chocolate swizzle on it. That was awesome. And then I split half a donut with my son.
So 3.5.
Three and a half
donuts. That wasn't the end of the day. Then what?
No, that was before 9 a.m.
Right.
So that was all that. let me see. For lunch, I went to High Cotton
Mayonnaise.
That day. I had the 3-meat platter that's on the dinner menu, not on the lunch menu. I had to ask special for the dinner menu. I got ribs. I got the fried chicken, which is awesome down there. Their fried chicken is amazing. And I got pulled pork to go with mac and cheese and the cornbread.
Did you eat it all?
I did.
Okay.
Every morning.
Take that, haters!
Did you eat again before dinner?
Yeah, so that was lunch. And then I had snacks all day of delicious, crunchy, salty things like Cheez-Its, pretzels,
right.
Various chips and things.
Okay.
I made a big
and then dinner?
Potpourri. Dinner that night. What was dinner that night? What did we do for dinner that night? Oh, pizza. I had pizza.
Oh, how many slices?
Five. And okay. I had two. Yeah. Thank you, Jay. No, that's Coach Tom Sula. And then they have a thing that's garlic bread. It's not really bread. It's just the pizza crust with cheese and garlic sauce on it.
I mean, that'd be fair to say.
So I had two of those. No, well, not. I'm talking about they're basically slices of pizza where it's just cheese and garlic sauce. No tomato sauce on there. So I had two of those as well.
And that's what led to you.
Maybe, but then I had dessert as well.
What was the dessert?
There was some fudge. I had a hurricane from one of the local establishments.
It's drink?
Where no, it's not alcoholic. It's where they put ice cream and various heavy things and then a bunch of toppings, and they whip it up, and then they serve it to you, and it was giant. I got the biggest size you can get.
It's a heck of a day.
Yeah.
It's a heck of a day. Do you boys have any questions before we see who's closest to the pin?
I have three, actually. How many – I didn't hear – how many donuts total did you have?
So that
during
day,
your 10 days.
Well, that day was 3.5, and then I got sick that night. So it wasn't as – thank you, Coach. It wasn't as absurd after that, but I only had 3 donuts total
after
the 3.5 gorging.
And then how many times during your 10 days would you say you snacked?
I lost count.
Okay.
Dozens. I was snacking in perpetuity.
Oh, I just remembered a fourth question.
Uh-huh.
That day you left, you texted us all and said that you ate a burrito, chips, and queso.
Correct.
Where did you get that from, and what did you get in the burrito?
Oh, that's a great question. Thursday, what you don't know, Grant, is because you were out, I was really, really disciplined.
Mm-hmm.
I was awesome before this. I really got down and was looking good. Not good, but I was looking as mediocre as I normally do. But I was very disciplined. I didn't have anything bad for basically a couple weeks, and then I went ham. I got a Chipotle burrito with the barbacoa. I did not opt for a guac extra, but I did put the rice right in there, which is perfect. 3 kinds of salsa and cheese, of course, and then I got the chips and salsa to go with it.
Good choice.
Okay. Last question: when you were doing the manual labor of taking stuff to and from the beach,
mm-hmm.
how many trips did you make a day? So, like, one trip there and one trip back, and that's it.
So, with all the stuff, yes.
Okay,
but that I have to bring a kid back for a nap time,
not
a bathroom. Yeah, but I'm not carrying anything.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Danny Ryer.
Right. Any questions, Tommy?
No, Dar took all mine.
All right, good. So then, Dar, if you don't mind, let's
Danny
give
Ryer.
The numbers that were predicted before we get our actual number by all of those participants
mm-hmm.
back when he left for vacation.
So the original numbers were Tom Daly, 8 pounds, Pete Medhurst, 11 pounds, CK, 13 pounds, Grant, 13.2 pounds, me, 14 pounds.
Okay.
Those are good guesses.
Got to be closest to the pin without going over to win. The game is how much weight did Danny gain on vacation?
No tricks here. This is not one of those neck bones where I lost weight somehow. That's not what happened. I left on Friday morning. I weighed myself at 5:45 a.m. 206.6. 206.6, as I mentioned. I was really good. I got down. When I returned. Last night, 1 a.m., and I woke up this morning, as I normally do, to get ready to come to do the radio program with you fine gentlemen. 206.4, a gain of 19.8 pounds, ladies and gentlemen. I did not top my per diem record of New Orleans, but my overall record has been shattered. I am a fat bleep. Everything about me is disgusting and reprehensible and shameful, and I walk around knowing that I'm an embarrassment. Do you understand how ridiculous that is?
Do you have
any idea what I did to myself? It includes one purge with Ethan Hawke. that on the second day, and I kept going 8 more days of fat, disgusting behavior.
19.8 pounds in 8 days
with a Vomitov cocktail in there.
An average of 2 pounds a day.
Yep.
Still doesn't touch your 4 pounds a day in New Orleans.
That daily record will never get touched. That's so amazing.
I'm actually, one of my big takeaways there is you got down under 207 again.
I did.
That was pretty impressive.
I was really disciplined.
What's your normal kind of playing weight over the last 6 months?
I hover like right 215? Around, yeah, in between 212 and 216. That's where
right.
I hover.
So you chopped some wood. You're back to 226.4.
As of right now, that's 226.4. That's why this chair feels a little rickety.
19.8 pounds. Who guessed the most weight?
Darted.
Dar, you're the winner. Well done. That's how we play. How much weight did Danny gain on vacation? The Beltway Blitz is next.
Hey, guys. Danny Ruyang, a heavier Danny Ruyang for Ted Britt Ford.
Shame.
Thank you very much. My Ford Shame. Fusion that I got from Ted Britt Ford hauled Shame. My fatter behind back from the Outer Shame. Banks this past weekend. That's what should Shame. Have been following me as I walked through the town square.
Shame.
Obese. Just oozing out my sides. Shame. You know what I'm talking about, Tommy, where it oozes?
Shame.
Oh, disgusting. If I were on an airplane, the person next to me would roll their eyes when I came and sat down, like, Shame. Oh, this fat bastard here? Gross.
Shame.
That's me. Ted Britt Ford, though.
Shame.
They don't deserve any shame. They deserve praise.
Shame.
Here's what's going on.
Shame.
Summer of 60s in full swing. No payments shame. For 60 days because they're celebrating their 60th anniversary over there, Ted Britt Ford. They've been taking care of people, even fat pukes like me. For
Shame.
60 years. Stop shaming me, Tom.
Shame.
Stop it. They're in Fairfax. They're in Chantilly. Click away at TedBritt.com. These guys are the best. I got 3 different cars over my lifetime from Ted Britt Ford. I love the experience so much. I went back. We just got the Ford Edge, the 2019 Ford Edge. It's down there at the beach right now with the wife and a couple of kids. We love it. I got my Fusion. I love that
I
car.
I own a Mustang.
You could own a Mustang. You could be like that Danny Rauer guy and own a Mustang. $7,000 off the MSRP on a 2019 Ford Mustang. Plus, no payments for 60 days. That's what's going on at Ted Britt Ford. You buy a car, you don't pay them anything for 60 days, right? I have to pay off my credit card bill for all the food that I bought down at the Outer Banks.
Shame.
You can spend nothing at Ted Britt Ford for 60 days. That's the way you do it. Go see them. And when you go, please tell them that the overweight Danny Ruyang is here.
Shame.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.